This show is a proud member of the Nerdy Legion Podcast Network. Get more at nerdylegion.com. Enjoy the show.
This is Brightside Home Theater.
Hey, home theater nerds. Welcome to the Brightside Home Theater Podcast, the podcast that focuses on the experiences we have in our theaters. And this week, the experiences, I have a guest. Jeff, how you doing, buddy?
How are you, DJ? Thanks again for having me on.
Again? No problem. How have you been? Last time you were on was 2 months ago. You were on to do Lord of the Rings Fellowship Part 2. Here we are back. And by the way, this is Jeff from HDReport.com. That's HD-Report.com. And on Twitter, it's at HDReport. How you been over the last 2 months?
Very busy. I was just saying that coronavirus time it's supposed to go by slow. You think because you're not doing as much. But for me, it's just the opposite. It seems to be flying by. Like the whole year's gone already.
Well, like everything else, I think there's that gap. Where you had, like, I remember back a year ago in April, and I was like a top waiting to spin someplace. Where do I go? Because I had nothing to do. And it was difficult because I'm always got to be doing something. But it's only that few weeks where you adjust and then you find something else to do. But here life is coming back and we're starting to get back to normal a little bit. And now all the normal stuff is coming on to the additional stuff we've picked up to keep us busy.
That's a good point. Yep.
Yeah, it's tough, but hey, we're making do. It's like, I think of all the stuff I've learned here. Last time we talked, you had a lot of stuff going on. You had, the anniversary of Blu-ray came up, correct?
4K Blu-ray.
4K Blu-ray.
Yes,
the anniversary came up.
5 years. This month, March, early March. And this summer will be regular Blu-ray. 1080p Blu-ray, the anniversary.
And how many years has that been?
That's 15 years.
Wow.
Can you imagine? 2006 was the first year of the Blu-ray.
The Blu-ray HD DVDs.
Yeah, yeah.
The battle for the ages.
The formats. I don't see Dolby Vision and HDR 10 going at it like HD DVD and Blu-ray did though.
No, because yeah, it's it's a codec though, isn't it? That's something that. Yeah. Can you really tell a difference? And you don't need a different player. All the players play the different formats and stuff. So,
yeah, and HD 10 is open source too. So there's not really a driving commercial. Well, maybe, but you know, a driving commercial force behind it.
Right.
Whereas, yeah. Anyway.
Yeah. So, but yeah, you get in. How long have you been doing this? For people that don't know, but how long have you been doing HDR? I love that name, by the way. Your logo is HDR, and
you like that?
How long have you been you've been doing this longer than HDR was around? Correct.
Well, yeah, for video, yeah. I mean, HDR for photo has been around for a while.
Yeah,
yeah. I mean, 2000. Wait, when did I? 2006, I believe I launched the website because I had been working with this other company, and I really loved what we did. We launched a website. Having to do with high definition television and everything, and kind of fell through, and I really enjoyed it. So I just went back into it, and it's been a passion, you know. I mean, I love package media, and then the streaming media came along, and it's just really fun.
Yeah, and you guys do everything over there. You do, like you just said, you do the package media, you do physical media, you do streaming media, you do the hardware. You do a lot of you have features on all of the different equipment and stuff, and I mean. It's pretty much an all-in-one stop.
Well,
for all things home theater related, it's like you get good reviews.
I mean, we could be more techie, I think. And we just try to hit, you know, we're more consumer oriented, you know, less industry. But yeah, I mean, trying to, you know, keep our users coming back and give them something to look at and read. And, it's fun. Yeah.
Cool. All right, let's get to some of my typical open here. My name's DJ, by the way, if you're not watching on YouTube where you can see our names and everything like that. My name's DJ. Thank you for tuning in to Brightside Home Theater. You can reach me on Twitter at BrightsideHT, or you can email me at BrightsideHomeTheater@gmail.com, or you could check out my website, BrightsideHomeTheater.com, and you can leave comments on the website underneath all of the featured theaters and under all of the podcasts. They're all listed there. And I really appreciate, I say it every week, please go and leave a comment to any and all, but any of the featured theaters. Those guys put out a lot of work into those theaters, and it's their passion, and it's great when they get comments and feedback on those. So I really appreciate that. But we are also on, got to move this along here. Boom. There's all the links right there. Oh yeah. And we are also on YouTube. So please, I really appreciate it. If you're not already watching this on YouTube, check it out on YouTube and then go hit that subscribe button. It doesn't cost you anything, and I really appreciate it. So we are also on Patreon. Just go to Patreon, search Brightside Home Theater. And this week we have a new Patreon supporter, Tom H. And that brings us to magic number 13. I have 13 Patreon supporters, Jeff. And ironically, this is the 13th week of the year.
No kidding.
Yeah, because last year I went through the entire year and all it was, week 13 of, 2020, and I counted the year down. And when I started doing it, it was just to then I would have whatever movie I was featuring, right? Well, then the, virus hit, and I was like, now I'm counting down to the end of 2020, which was just awful because all year long. And I was just like, oh, well. So I stopped doing that, but I'm still doing it behind the scenes in my notes here. So I'm like, okay, movie number 13 for the year. And it happens that this is the 13th week of the year, and I got my 13th Patreon.
That's great.
Isn't that it? I'm calling it lucky.
It sounds like a good plan to be every,
Yeah, I've got a good story about the number 13 that I'll tell you off air. But I'll just give you a background. I was in Canada in Montreal with my hockey team. We were staying on the 13th floor, and one of my teammates had the 13th room.
Oh.
Let's just say he came home with a decent story. So, it's not always good to stay on the 13th floor in the 13th room.
So I thought they took off. I thought a lot of hotels take down.
Not in Canada. Not at the Marriott. Canada. Oh, yeah. Montreal. That was a fun time. Just think of St. Catherine Street, Montreal. What could possibly go wrong with a hockey team?
I figured you were the hockey player being from the North.
Northeast. Oh, well, yeah, half the year's frozen, so gotta do something. All right, moving on. Twitter. We have some new Twitter followers this week. We have Fred Baldwin and Austin Helmink. Helmink. Yeah, I'm always screwing up these names. But all right, thank you, Fred and Austin. Welcome to Brightside Home Theater. Take a look around. Make yourselves at home. Thanks for joining the community. And that will do it for that. And then we also have a movie this week brought to us by G Cornell 52 email. And let me pull it up here on the screen. There we go. It's Mission Impossible 3. He says, quote, accurate timing at the 53 minute and 56 second mark, Ving says he needs 30 more seconds. 23 seconds later, at the 54:19 mark, he says, 6 more seconds. At 54:19, he says, uploading. It was real time in the movie to the movie, and it was that accurate. And he checked that out. That was pretty cool. Wow. He said, I had the on-screen OPPO clock running, so according to my checking, Ving was accurate to the second till the end when he uploaded at 5 seconds or 1 second too soon. You can run it and see if you agree. And then he said, also, Maggie Q blowing up her Lamborghini, a concussive explosion, my ear reacted. So, pretty cool. Check out those scenes. Need a paper towel. That's okay. Yeah, I meant to check out that scene myself, but I had to build this entire website for tonight's podcast, so I didn't get a chance to do that. So, oh well, but I will check that out. I love, that's awesome to be able to check out, like, even just that little nitty gritty that they did that in the movie, that they kept right. that real. Pretty cool.
It's great.
Moving on to Twitter and email comments this week. We have first one up. See, even this went much better in rehearsal. First up, we have WV Brew on Twitter at BrightsideHT. Justice League Snyder Cut, completely different, most badass superhero movie ever. Damn. Wow. And if you're not watching this on YouTube, it is all caps. And that's not like WV Brew. He types, but he doesn't always type in all caps like my mother-in-law. He really means this. What did you think of Justice League?
Now, that's a fan.
I know, fan. Huh?
You know, I'm gonna tell you, did you see it? I've seen it.
Oh, okay, cool.
I had just recently watched Justice League too, because I have the cool Steelbook edition.
Yep.
And I thought the first one was really good. I actually really enjoyed it. I thought some good parts to it. But the new one, the Snyder Cut's, is there one joke in that movie? It's a pretty dark movie.
The Flash. I thought The Flash was still humorous.
That's true.
He was still humorous.
But, It's a great movie. I actually really enjoyed the black and white version. I thought that was great.
Yes, I think the black and white version is going to be fantastic on disc. I thought it suffered from low HDR. Mm-hmm. You know, streaming, the compression you get, you just don't get the HDR that you can get on a disc, right? Mm-hmm. And I felt that way in the standard version, the color, but The thing with it though is it's so bright. The colors are so nice. It kind of distracts you from, it's a little bit, it felt a little dim to me. Mm-hmm. And then watching it in black and white, that's when I was like, you know what? It doesn't have the punch of Logan. You know, Logan in the black and white, I felt that's the preferred way to watch it. Mm-hmm. And I don't even like that movie in color anymore, because I feel like the color distracts from how well that movie is shot. The cinematography, the lighting that they used, because they knew they were shooting this in black and white. Mm-hmm. So I don't expect it to be that good, but I do expect it to be better on disc.
Mm-hmm. How about the, which movie was that? The last Mad Max movie. Did you see the black and white version? That was really nice and crisp and crunchy black and white. Yeah. I like that a lot.
That was same thing. I still don't think that's probably a better comparison for Snyder Cut. Cause mm-hmm. I feel like after listening to some of the extras and stuff on Logan, mm-hmm. I feel like they filmed that with the purpose of the black and white version. Whereas the other ones, they were like, you know what? This, as they were filming it, that felt more like not necessarily an afterthought, but like, you know what? This would look good, because some of the scenes in Logan, you can see how they're lighting it so sharply and so dramatically that it would, you know, it lends itself to black and white, to that crispness, and get those nice grays in the middle. Even the colors that are used in the color version, they lend themselves to a good black and white image. Whereas I feel like, well, actually, you know what? Fury Road is kind of the same way, because you've got a lot of oranges and that desert look and stuff. And a lot of those colors, they play well in black and white, because reds come off as a little bit like a charcoal, like a dark black or a dark charcoal stuff. So maybe, but that's what I would kind of expect the Snyder Cut to be like.
Now, have you seen The Lighthouse?
No.
That's really a beautiful film in black and white. You should check that out. Yeah. Robert Pattinson and, Defoe, right?
Willem Defoe, yeah.
That's a great, yeah, it's really nicely shot. And that's a really square compared to the 4:3. So what did you think about the 4:3 format? Did you enjoy that?
Loved it.
Did you?
I loved it. I built, I have a 110-inch screen, and I built the, masking for the side of it. Out of velvet.
I saw you building that.
Oh, you saw that. Look at you.
I saw it for free. I didn't have to pay.
There you go. Yeah. Well, it's on YouTube for free. But yeah, it's, it looks, to me, it looks fantastic. And mm-hmm. I don't blame a lot of people for not liking it because I think mm-hmm. on the smaller images, you don't get the grandiose image that, I mean, I hate to say this, but I mean, Gal Gadot is so good looking and she's such a long figure mm-hmm. that as, not that that's the only image on, in the Snyder Cut, but there are some shots of her that anything outside of those black bars would just be like, I'm not even looking there anyways. You know, it's like, it's a long shot of her, yeah. but then there's some other shots. And I think in the black and white version, it's going to, it's also going to, you're going to see some better lines that the composition of the page of the screen mm-hmm. is going to be a lot better in black and white because you're going to see mm-hmm. everything the way it's laid out. It's really nice.
Well, you know, in traditional photography, black and white photography, the square is a lot of times it's used to its fullest, right? So mm-hmm. if you're looking at me, my head would be almost here or coming out of the top, right?
Right.
Whereas there are some shots in the Snyder Cut that I don't feel like they were really planned. I don't think they were planned right because there was a whole bunch of headroom above and you're like, well, that couldn't have been composed that way. It looks odd to me.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, I love the 4:3. I like seeing that stuff. Especially, like, if you're going to shoot, you know, they say, like, if you're going to shoot dinosaurs, you got to shoot, you know, more of a tall image, right? Or if you shoot, like, a landscape or the ocean, okay, you go as wide as possible.
Yep. Well, like the Lord of the Rings, the movie we're going to talk about tonight. It's, I mean, you're getting these glorious shots of New Zealand that you want to see that landscape.
Right.
You want to
see it spread
out.
Well, also, there's, when you see something that wide, it's a little more, it's more fantasy, right? Mm. Whereas things that are like us talking right now, it's a smaller square. We're compressed in that frame. It's more realistic.
Right.
Right. So if you want to shoot a fantasy film, you pretty much have to think wide, right?
Right. It's funny. Wait till you see this video and how it's cropped and what we're cropped in. I actually have little black bars on either side of us. Just out of coincidence, because of the way, I mean, we were setting this up as we're on the fly, and I'm like, okay, that's good enough, but it's funny we're talking about that, and exactly what you're saying, it'll be funny when you see the image, you'll be like, this is what we're talking about. Our image has black bars on the sides.
That's great.
But,
I was going to say, the other thing about, you know, when you see, you know, a black and white movie, I mean, when you talk about black and white versus color, you know, when you see something in black and white, you see the subject matter. You know, you see what the picture's about, right? So as soon as you see a black and white picture, you're looking at the subject matter, what it means. As soon as you see a color image, you're looking at color. Like, that's what your mind does. You're looking at the color first. So what I love about seeing the black and white version is that you're really focusing on the things in the picture rather than the bright, beautiful colors.
Right.
It almost the makes detail. You want to see the Lord of the Rings in black and white. Right?
Yeah. Especially this. Yeah. Well, you could actually just do it yourself.
You could. You just pull out all the saturation.
Yeah. You pull everything out on your, you could adjust it on your projector and be like, or your display and be like, there you go. But you're 100% right because watching the Snyder Cut in black and white and seeing some of the costumes, seeing some of the detail in there, some of the highlights. Mm-hmm. And that to me is where I was like, you know, I can't wait for the disc because that stuff's going to be crisper just because of the 4K and uncompressed. And then when you get into the HDR, we're not talking about a color palette here. It doesn't matter if it's, you know, Rec 2020 or 709 because you're right. It's all simplified and your mind literally, it's simplified for you. It's your mind doesn't have to worry about adjusting colors and stuff. All you're looking at is the details, the shadows and everything, all the little highlights, those things are jumping out at you. Mm-hmm. And it's going to be a lot of fun. I can't wait for that disc. It should be a great disc set should have everything in it, I'm sure.
Two discs, you think? Black and white, one color?
Probably four.
Four because it's so long, it's a 4-hour deal.
Yeah, just like these Lord of the Rings, it's going to take two discs to complete the movie.
Right.
But I'll take it. I will take it. All right, moving on. Next comment. Steve George, at LegalBeagleOK on Twitter, at BrightsideHT. Hey, DJ, I have two words for you after listening to the first part of this week's podcast. Super Speedway. The name of that disc always eludes you, buddy. So last week I was talking about F1 Drive to Survive, I think it is. That what it is? The Netflix series. And I was like, oh, there's an IMAX disc. There's a Blu-ray that I used to watch it on DVD. And I think I had the Laserdisc as well. And I can never remember the name of it. And Steve loves to call me on it. So, cause he always remembers it. And I didn't own it on Blu-ray until he said it. I still have my DVD copy and I was able to find it. And it does. It holds up so well. It looks spectacular for a movie that was made in the 90s. Have you seen this one?
No. Oh, the older one. Yeah. I haven't seen the whole thing.
Where they rebuilt the car from Mario Andretti.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, it's really, really nice. It's very sharp image. And the sound was only made for 5.1 back in the day, but it's so crisp. It's so like, it's so deliberate. Like cars come up on you from behind. They have them racing and it's like, you hear it coming from the rear channels and whoom, goes right by. It's really, really well done. I love that disc. Showed it to my son and he was super impressed by it. And it came out in 98, the year, 97, the year he was born. So it's as old as he is, 24 years. Next up, Martin Ferretti at Geekvine replying about, Godzilla King of the Monsters on Twitter. You have the most detailed show notes of any show I have ever seen. And I replied, I'm like, you should see what's in my head. But it's funny because I've had other people make that comment about my show notes, and this gets back into what Steve George said in the last comment. My mind is so like ADD. It's like I'm so like it's so spinning that if you take me off topic and in a situation like this where I know I'm performing or I'm under the gun and I don't want to insult anybody, I don't want to make a mistake, you just go blank. And I just forget stuff. So my notes have to be really good for me to be able to keep going. It's just the way my mind works. And I just put the show notes out to everybody, all the timestamps, everything that I use. So, hey, you get the benefit of it. You don't have to read it, Martin.
Nobody's forcing you.
No, Martin's awesome. He actually runs the Nerdy Legion that I'm a part of.
Oh, nice.
That's the podcast network. Yeah, he's awesome. Oh, he took a chance on me. All right, next comment. Theo at the One Alpha on Twitter. Great show as always. Loving it. Thanks, Theo. Really appreciate that. Commenting on Godzilla King of the Monsters. Adriano the Nerd at AdrianoTweets87 on Twitter. How's the house? Still standing? Talking about Godzilla King of the Monsters. And you've seen that, right? Of course you've seen that, right?
Yeah.
It's... Oh, yeah. Unreal at reference level. I reviewed it last week and it is now my favorite movie for sound. I've heard great things about Godzilla vs. Kong, but until the disc comes out, we don't know if it matches the quality of this, but this movie from beginning to end is just an absolute. I said it makes Jurassic Park DTS seem like a Charlie Brown special. It's ridiculous.
That was a great comment. Yeah.
it really does because there are some nice scenes in Jurassic Park and the opening scene with the Velociraptor. It's like, it's painful at times, but then it goes into the nice scenes of when you first see the dinosaurs and you get the nice score and you get all that. This Godzilla, King of the Monsters, it is an assault from beginning to end. And the added part that the entire movie is based on sound. That's what the movie is about them trying to communicate with the monsters.
Great point.
Using that alpha wave, right? And then you have that scene, and I got chills. I'm getting chills thinking about it now of that scene when the mother was talking to Millie Bobby Brown, and she was behind her, and they changed her voice. They like just made it go down to I can't remember what was her name and what was Millie's name in the movie, whatever, but whatever it was, say it was Millie, but she went
Millie
and they changed it. So like, because that's what kids do. They're attuned to their parents' voice and they use that same alpha philosophy on the mother to her. And I thought that was really cool. And that's what the whole movie's about.
That was a great movie in the theaters. Did you see it in the theater as well?
Oh yeah. Yeah. My son and I saw it and it was like, oh, that was awesome.
That's, I just remember the visuals were incredible, but the sound just, it was.
Yeah. Yeah. The visuals are great too. I didn't think the 4K was anything to, it wasn't bad, but it wasn't like I was like, wow, that, it's not like, you know, Lord of the Rings, what we're talking about tonight, but it was good for a monster movie. And I think for movies like this, they can only go so good with it because then it starts to expose some of the special effects and everything, you know? So, but the sound on it, absolutely insane. Next comment, from WV Brew again at WV Brew. At Brightside HT, another great concert, The Who 2017, great audio, video, and song list. And this is on Quello. Have you heard of that website, that app?
I heard of it. Yeah.
And really, really good because it actually leads right into the next comment. Comes from Byron Stocks, at Byron Stocks. He says, at Lee Overtweet, at First Reflect, and at Brightside HT. I'm curious. I use my home theater mainly for movies and shows, but I've noticed I get far more enjoyment listening to music. Curious if you guys have the same thing. Meaning, a good jam session, then the best movie I could watch. Thoughts. And my comment to him was, I can't, and at First Reflect, which is Rob from AV Rant, he said the same thing. I basically echoed his sentiments. I can't listen to music and sit still. I never have been able to do that. I'm not one to put on a pair of headphones and sit back and relax and listen to music. Music to me is very motivational. So I need to either work out or work or put on something. It's like the running joke in the family is when you can tell dad's snow blowing because I'm singing outside louder than the snow blower. And I'm just I'm just jamming out, you know, having a blast.
Yeah. That's gotta be loud. Well, that's because you probably lost your hearing from the Godzilla movie.
That's true. That is true. Huh? What? But, yeah, do you sit still and listen to music or do you listen to it in your theater environment?
Not in a theater environment. No.
No.
No, but I do listen. I listen to all kinds of music. I mean, I love this new stuff that's on YouTube where they call them like the lo-fi jazz type jams and all that kind of stuff. There's a real good channel called Analog Journal that plays like all this vinyl stuff from around the world. It's like stuff I've never heard before. But yeah, it really depends on my mood. Like if I'm working, I can't really listen to rap or anything like that or anything that demands your concentration, right?
Right, right.
But if I'm working out, riding bike or whatever, you listen to whatever, yeah.
Yeah, it's always motivational to me. So mowing the lawn, anything, working out, running.
What are you singing while you're,
oh my God, 80s hair bands. And I'm just thinking off the Poison? Top of my head. I'm
Rat?
Like, yeah, oh, Poison. Yeah. Love Poison. Rat, Bon Jovi. I'm like, you know, I'm like, it's snowing like crazy out. I'm behind the snowblower and I'm like, living on a prayer. You know, I'm just going nuts and like screaming at the top of my lungs. And I come in the house and everybody just starts laughing at me. I was like, oh, you could hear that.
You got any Madonna going on there?
No. No, but I tell you, here's one that I listen to when I'm cycling. I'll have one ear piece in when I'm road biking. And it's Wrecking Ball. Miley Cyrus. Okay. Oh my God. You can hammer to that because it goes slow. You can do real nice intervals. And it's like when she says the line, like you came in like a wrecking ball, he's like, and you came in, and it gets really, the music ramps up. You just start hammering and go. And by the time she gets through that line, you're like, and then it goes nice and slow. And then you can slow down. So you get nice intervals in there. I've listened to that song 3-4 times in a row. Just because it's so much fun to just go hard and then slow down. It's, but see what I mean? It's all motivational. And it's like, I love Miley Cyrus. I think she's.
I'm going to send you a Miley Cyrus t-shirt.
There you go. My daughter loves Miley. I took her right when she changed to Miley from Hannah. My daughter's, she's 21 right now. So she's right at that age. She grew up with Hannah Montana. you know, a little bit younger than Miley herself. And we went to see her at the Garden in Boston when she first became Miley Cyrus before she went all adult Miley. So it wasn't, my daughter was, I think it was her 11th birthday or maybe it was her 10th. She was 10 years old and we got her in there and she, it was a great concert. She's like the modern day Madonna. She really is like pushing the envelope, trying to be crazy, do stuff, but she does it in an artistic way. And I don't like all of her music, but I like that stuff. I like that idea, you know, artistically. Mm-hmm. So, all right, let's see. What else do we have next here? I've lost track of everything here. This one's cool. If you're on YouTube, OD Photography at Omar Delgado. It says, nothing like relaxing Sunday, like a relaxing Sunday and watching At Brightside HT. And he sent an image of me on his big screen. Get that off there. It's going to break.
That's pretty, that must be fun for you to know that somebody's watching you on a 75-inch OLED or whatever he's got.
I know. It's, I'm like, I gotta filming this in HDR.
I'm scared thinking about myself on a big screen like that. Wow.
It's funny. It is. It's fun though. It's like I got talking about Patreon. So my newest Patreon supporter, Tom, I got today. Okay. And I was like, oh, cool. And he sent me a nice note along with it. And I thanked him, of course. And I said, you know, it's the notes too. It's the stuff like this from OD. It's like, that's what drives you. It's like, all right, I got to do more. And it makes you want to advance and everything. And it's like, and I said to, Tom, about, I go, it's not just the money. And I appreciate the money from the Patreon supporters, but it's the messages too. And the money, I'm hoping that if it grows, I can do even more, you know, and I want to, cause it's all going back into the podcast cause it costs money to do these anyways. But you know what I mean? It's like, it's flattering. It's fun. And it's motivational. It's a blast. It's like when I first sat down by myself, just like you starting your website, it's a passion. But then when you get support and people come out, you're like, wow, there's other people like me. This is cool.
It drives you. It does, right?
It does. Absolutely. Yeah.
And it
absolutely
doesn't matter how few the people are. You just,
no,
you know,
yeah. No. As a matter of fact, when John and I from my other podcast, when we came over to the Nerdy Legion, we already were a podcast. We'd been around for a year and we had our amount of, I knew of like 100 listeners or something like that. But supposedly when you join a network, you get a bunch more and you get all these analytics that go along with it. And cause you're a network, right? But I was like, you know what? I don't want to lose like the contact and everything. I just don't want that. And they're like, nope, I want it to be migrate seamlessly for my existing listeners. I don't care if I pick up thousands more listeners. I don't want it to be difficult. I don't want to lose any of my existing just because a hiccup or something went wrong. So it's like, but you're right. It's like, it doesn't have to be a ton of people. It's just, it's just fun doing what we do, you know? So. Let's see. Do we have another one? Yes, we do. We have, these are from, the website. This is Paul. Thanks, DJ. I am now on Amazon ordering this movie just for the Atmos. And that's talking about Godzilla, King of the Monsters. He left that underneath that web page. And then we got two new comments under Stuart Cinema. Martin says, the amount of movies and memorabilia alone make this a winner, A+. And Matt said, love the room, nice and cozy, well done. So thank you guys for leaving comments to Stuart Cinema. But yeah, go there, check out all the different podcasts, all the different home theaters.
Have you worked out that issue you had with running a trailers, I think it was? They flagged you for content, yeah.
Yeah, well, it's not an issue. What it is I can't make money off of those I don't make money off of YouTube anyways.
But you could, you know, if you clip them, if you use them in clips, then you have.
Right.
You know,
I like running the whole trailer, but yeah, I could break it up, but I used to do that, on my other podcast where it was no video and I would clip the trailers so that they were, because it was an audio only podcast, right? And you're like, you don't want a lot of music and stuff in the middle. So I would actually clip them, take the time and do that. So it would be like a 2 minute, it turn it into a 45 second trailer and it came off pretty good. But I don't mind doing it here. It's not like YouTube is going to, it's not costing me anything because they're not paying me because I'm not getting paid from them anyways. So.
Right.
I mean, if they charged me to do it, then I'd be like, all right, sorry, go here. Like I say in the podcast, I'm like, go listen to it someplace else, but no big deal. All right. That brings us to featured theaters. We don't have a featured theater this week. And that's okay. We've got plenty to do. But if you'd like to have your feature, I say that every week. If you'd like to have your theater featured, you can email me at brightsidehometheater@gmail.com and, we'll talk about it. If you have a theater that you think is, you know, has a great environment or it's still building, they're always evolving as they always are, send it on in and we'll talk about it here. And you know what, Jeff? That brings us to this week's topic.
Hey, can I ask you a quick question before?
Sure.
Where can I get one of those sweatshirts? The Bright Side sweatshirt.
I don't advertise them enough, but they are on the website. You can click on the website and you can, go to TeePublic, but the links are on the website and everything on, it's under merch and you can get t-shirts, you can get sweatshirts, you can get cups, mugs, all sorts of fun stuff. I should
so those
talk
are,
about that.
Those more. Are made on demand or you got boxes sitting in your home theater?
I used to do that. No, this one, they're made on demand. They ship around the world. I checked that out. Yeah, they ship, TeePublic, they opened up, they have places in Europe so they can ship directly quicker instead of having to ship from the United States. They're pretty good. They're not as nice as if I have, I go down the street here, but if I did them myself, I would have to ship them myself. I would have to pay for them in bulk and I'd have to have a bunch of them and hope that people bought them and they don't. I'm not that popular, you know, but now it's like you could just go there, you pick out what you want and there's a lot more choices. I bought myself t-shirts, a long sleeve t-shirt. I bought, you know, stickers. I tried
coffee mug.
Things.
Get the coffee mug going yet? Oh, nice.
I don't have one. My wife does, but yeah, you could do all that stuff.
Hmm.
But yeah, go to TeePub. Actually, just go to the website, click on merch under, you know, and it'll take you right to my page on TeePublic. So, but thank you for asking.
I'm going to look into that page. I want to see what you got.
There you go. I have everything TeePublic has. It's just put your thing. You know what I would like to do? It's another one of my pet projects that, you know, when I'm not distracted doing something else, is I want to come up with quotes. And like my favorite quote, and this is the one that I've come up with so far, but like, go ahead, make my day. Ask me about my home theater, Brightside Home Theater. You know what I mean? And take quotes from movies and then say, ask me about my home theater. And it's like, cause that's what we all want, but it'd be like, go ahead, make my day, you know, quote from a movie like that and incorporate it into a home theater line like that. So that's, and it'd come up with a t-shirt like that. So I can do that. I just have to take the time to produce the t-shirt and then submit it to TeePublic and tell everybody about it.
That'd be great. Well, maybe you'll come up with some kind of a quote tonight that we could use.
Maybe. All right. Let's get to Lord of the Rings, The Two Towers, Part 2. Now, my first question to you, Jeff, is you've said before we started, you've seen this a few times. Are you enjoying watching it multiple times a year? Like, because you're coming on here, you watched it again. Is that enjoyable? I know the answer, but go ahead.
Every time is enjoyable.
Exactly.
Every time that I can actually sit down and really enjoy it is enjoyable.
Yeah.
So, yeah. No, I mean, I mean, there's a couple, you know, the few scenes here and there I might have to fast forward, but,
if you've
much,
seen it a few times, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I've seen the 4K version, I think between 3 and 4 times now.
Oh, wow. You know,
and I say between because I probably like for tonight and for the, still need to publish a review for the second part, for the Two Towers. I jump through it a little bit here and there because it just takes too long. But, yeah, no, I mean, and I'm looking forward to The Return of the King to get back into that one again.
Yeah. See, I knew I'd like it, but I didn't think I'd like it this much. Like, I'm really looking forward to, like, next month, doing Return of the King. Mm-hmm. And having that space in between, had I done these all at once or done each movie, you only get three opportunities in the year, right? And it's, mm-hmm. and then it's over. But where this is paced out like this, it really brings you back. And I think these movies deserve it because they are so well done that I take the rest of the month, I watch a bunch of other stuff, stuff that I review here, stuff that I'm just watching on my own, right? As we all do. But then you sit down again to watch another Lord of the Rings episode, whatever you're going to watch, and you're just immediately, as soon as the image comes on the screen, like in this one, it's like we're in the middle of it. And it's part two, so there's no big dramatic open or anything like that. And you just, it's just a little scene and it, which was pretty funny where Gimli falls off the horse, but mm-hmm. you're right in the thick of it right away. It's not a big grandiose opening, but it's that imagery that all of a sudden you're like, this is gorgeous. Mm-hmm. And you're just loving it. And you're like, this is how good an image can look.
Yeah. Well, I mean, the movie's timeless. I mean, and what they did was incredible, right? They filmed three movies at, in one shot, you know, or, 18 months or 2 years or whatever it was. And I mean, they created a really beautiful piece of work that's going to be, it's going to be timeless. And I think, you know, it's not just Peter Jackson. It's like, it seemed like the whole crew, the production crew, all the actors, everybody seemed to kind of get together on this project and they put so much into it. And you can really see that. And that's why I think that's such a great piece of work. Not only the technical aspect of it, or the writing. I mean, the writing is great. And everything else, but there's a real feeling like everybody really got along and yeah. wanted to make this piece, this masterpiece. And it really is. You know, I mean, you can't compare The Hobbit, right? I don't think you can compare. You can't compare Peter Jackson with all this stuff, although it's amazing. You know, he's done some amazing stuff. This is one work that's, there's no real comparison to it.
Right. At first I was going to say it has a great foundation. The mm-hmm. the source material is so good and it's timeless. And mm-hmm. the fact that it is, has been done so, accurately to the mm-hmm. source material helps a lot. But the remark about The Hobbit, do you think The Hobbit suffers because it came second? You know what I mean? Like you have that in your mind. You're like, yeah, we've been there. This isn't as impressive. You know what I mean?
That's a good point. That's a really good point. I can say two things about The Hobbit. Number one, the technical aspect is a little more advanced. You can see in yeah. the visual effects. I mean, you see, you know, some of the things, the close-ups, you can tell that they learned a lot.
Yeah.
From the Lord of the Rings. The second thing about it is they shot it in 3D. Right?
Right.
Which, you know, it's almost like for me, I'm thinking, well, maybe Peter Jackson, cause he, The Lord of the Rings was a challenge for him, right? It was a challenge for all everybody.
For everybody, yeah.
And I almost feel like he could have done The Hobbit, you know, could have been like easy for him, but he made it 3D also, which is, was probably another challenge that he put upon himself, I think, but, and I'm not sure I enjoy that 3D aspect of it. I just.
Do you think 3D is gimmicky?
I don't know. I mean, Avatar, that's one of a kind, right?
Right. That's where I was going to go. But, I was like, I think, I'm wondering if Peter Jackson was thinking like Cameron in that similar to, not that I'm anything like them, but when you do stuff like this, like what I'm doing here, it's like mm-hmm. you try to advance and it's like, okay, well, I did Lord of the Rings. What can I challenge myself with next? And mm-hmm. maybe he's trying. And of course, 3D just doesn't take off. Like other things do. But I think Cameron trying to push the envelope mm-hmm. with 3D, and who is it that did Billy Linz and Gemini Man? What's the director that did that? And he's doing that 60 frames per second or 120 frames per second, and he's trying to push the envelope there, where a lot of people are like, ah, soap opera effect, but mm-hmm. it looks so crisp. It's so, mm-hmm. so spectacular, and I think that's just artists pushing boundaries, trying to discover new things, you know?
Yeah. But and the other thing about The Hobbit is that that's one book, right?
Yeah.
So, you know, when Peter Jackson was originally trying to sell The Lord of the Rings, they only have a certain budget and, you know, Harvey Weinstein tried to condense it into two movies or one movie, right? you know, the story about how they, and, when he finally got his funding, you know, it was obvious. Three books, three movies, right? It just seemed to make sense. Whereas The Hobbit, you know, you're taking one book, which is actually a pretty short book, and you're expanding that to be three movies plus, you know, extended, right?
Right. So. Yeah. And, but that's the thing. They had, I think they did that money wise. They wanted to expand on that universe and get three movies out of that. And maybe that's why it doesn't come off as well. I don't know, but I think there is something to be said for the fact that it was second, you know, because you're not as impressed anymore. It's like, yeah, I've seen this. You can do this. No problem.
Hmm. Now, what if The Lord of the Rings didn't exist? Would The Hobbit still have the same?
I that's the thing. Well, here's the thing. I think it would have, I think if they had done The Hobbit first, which it is the prequel, right? I think that would have hurt The Lord of the Rings. I think people would have got, I think Lord of the Rings is a better story. There's no doubt about that to me, but I think there would have been you would have lost a little bit of the lore of Lord of the Rings where it doesn't, you wouldn't have that lore of being the first movie and being so, kind of groundbreaking in everything that they did with this. And then, you know, the restoration is fantastic too, but that obviously came after the fact. It already was a great movie before that. All right. Let's see. You want to go scene by scene? What I'll go time wise. What I have for scenes. Do you have notes on your scenes and stuff?
Yeah, I have notes on video and audio, so.
Okay. Well, my next scene after the opening would be at 10:35. When's yours?
I don't have the time for that. But you are talking extended, right? Just make me sure.
Yeah, oh, of course. Just it's always extended.
I'm just making sure that, I mean, it's probably a stupid question, right?
Yeah. Well, we could jump around, but I have mine in order so I can scroll the pictures on the screen as we go, but.
It's much better. That's the way I have mine too. I just, let's see here. Yeah. So you're just going to open with the, you know, the people of Rohan walking towards Helm's
Deep,
that
was
right?
The opening and Gimli falling off his horse and then his line of like, it's all right. That was deliberate. Which I think is great because that's what people, you know, that's the joke when you hit your head walking through a door or something. You're like, I meant that. Well, he says it in like, you know, Lord of the Rings vernacular of like, oh, it was deliberate. Mm-hmm. That was pretty cool.
Well, I think they also needed a pretty light moment before what's coming up.
Yeah. That at the 10:35, the scene that I have coming up, it's like I gave it my three boxes of popcorns because I mean, Legolas is my favorite character as it is. He is a lot of people, but this is the scene right when they start to, they hear the approaching, the orcs army approaching or the scout. They took down the scout or whatever. And then Legolas goes to the top of the hill and he starts firing off some arrows and he's at the center of the screen, but the arrows are going out of the right back corner of your room over your head. It just sounds fantastic. But then, I mean, I remember the first time I saw this and I was like, I cannot wait to get this home on DVD because that was what was out. Excuse me. When he grabs that horse from the left side of the horse underneath the neck with his right hand and whips himself up onto the horse, it's like the coolest mounting of a horse in cinematic history.
I was going to ask you, I mean, do you think that's actually physically possible?
No, I think it would rip the arm right out of his socket, to be honest with you.
It's great, but, you know, he's an elf. He can do, you know, magical things. So, but, you know, it's funny because, you're wondering, well, Gimli doesn't typically ride a horse. Why is he riding a horse? Okay, he's riding a horse because he's going to pick up Legolas, and then he's eventually going to fall off the horse.
Yeah.
And he's going to get flattened by a bunch of wolves of Isengard and some orcs.
Yeah.
So there's a reason why Gimli was on the horse.
Yeah. Yeah. But that, I love watching. I watched that scene so many times of him.
Well, that.
Get mounting that horse.
Yeah. That's great. So I have, you know, I have the timestamp at about 9 minutes. And okay. It follows the doesn't it follow the Aragorn, the flashback where he's talking to Arwen, right?
Okay.
You know, they're talking about how he's one of the Dunedain, he's 87 years old, and right?
At about 9 minutes, you said?
No, right before the scene where they run into the wolves.
Oh, okay. Okay.
There's a little bit of flashback. I just wanted to mention the part about Aragorn revealing that he's 87 years old, which I thought was
Cool. That whole, that is really, he's 87, which is actually, my son and I did the math. At the time of the filming, they doubled Viggo Mortensen's age.
Oh, no way.
Yeah. If you look up, it actually works out that they just basically doubled his actual age to 87. Because then we were trying to figure that would mean he'd live to be about 180, maybe 200 years old, something like, at that age. But he was 87. That was such a cool scene. But then my son was in, grabs his phone and he looks it up and he goes, they just doubled his age.
Yeah.
It's pretty funny.
But that scene where they, they're just walking through the fields and all of a sudden, there's such rich color. I don't know if you've got that same reaction, but, this bright green grass and the sky and all the colors. If you look at the armor that they're wearing, there's a lot of detail and color that you can pick up, especially in 4K. And you see like I don't know if you look at the streaming, the megabits per second, but I do. I always kind of go back and forth.
That's what I love you for. I get into the environment. I get all soaked up in that. And it's like, you guys get into the bits.
Yeah. Well, I think that scene is probably running between like 65 and 75 megabits per second, which is like pretty high.
Pretty
deep stuff. And the makeup on the orcs is just really beautiful and colorful. I did something different for this, for this review, quick review for you, is that I kind of changed my settings a little bit on my TV.
Okay.
Cause I usually try to calibrate it more for cinematic, but this time I raised the brightness a bit. I blew up all the blacks. Like I made them super dark blacks as deep as I could go. And
then
I cranked the gamma and I increased the color saturation and it looks like a graphic novel almost.
It
has a whole different look. Now, the blacks are crunched a little bit. Like they're just, I'm losing, some detail there, but it has so much punch that it's like watching a slightly different movie, but I kind of wanted to see it differently for this time.
Yeah.
And, there's so much color. There's so much great source material in this movie that they shot it so well.
Right. It's look at you, Mr. Digital Bits, and you're getting all artistic.
Well, when you shoot, when you have good source material, you could do so much with it, right?
Right.
You know, the saying, crap in, crap out. So there isn't much.
I was going to make a t-shirt for that back in my big cycling days when I was doing hundreds of miles. And it'd be like, if you ate wrong, it'd be like, you'd bonk. It's called bonking on a bicycle, but you'd crap out. And it's like, you eat crap goes in, you literally will crap out. You'll just fall over on the side of the road. But,
I like the idea of the bonk t-shirt. That'd be kind of cool.
Bonk. Yeah. I've bonked a few times. It's a horrible feeling.
So that sound of Legolas, the sound of when he looses the arrow.
Oh.
At 10 minutes, 30 seconds.
10:30.
It is so cool. I think he looses like three, maybe four before he gets on the horse with Gimli, and then they start battling it out, But you know the interesting thing about this, DJ, is that scene is so memorable to me. It's one of my favorite scenes. I don't know why. It's only 3 minutes long.
Oh yeah.
You think of it as like this battle, right? But it only lasts 3 minutes from the time they start battling till the end when, I don't know what Gimli. I think it ended up on Gimli, didn't it?
The shot you mean ends up on Gimli. You mean after Aragorn goes over the cliff?
Yeah, that's when everything stops. Yeah,
right. Yeah, and it ends on Gimli, and he's like looking like, where's Aragorn? Mm-hmm. All looking like, all right, who take? You know, they're basically taking attendance and seeing who's missing. And I thought it was really cool that the shot of Legolas when Theoden said, put the wounded on the horses, leave the dead.
Mm-hmm.
And the shot of Legolas, and I said this to my son when we were watching it, is like, mm-hmm. Legolas snapped him a look like, yeah. He was angry because he wanted to go after Aragorn.
He gave him a stank eye.
Yeah, but at the same time, Theoden has an entire, you know, community to think of. They've got to get to Helm's mm-hmm. Deep. It's like, we can't be spending time looking and trying to save, like, all right, I know Aragorn's great and all, but he went downriver if he's even still alive, and we're going to waste valuable time and resources when we've mm-hmm. got to get to the rest of the people. And, you know, Legolas went along with it, but that look, I thought, was, that was, you know, and then hoping that he was still alive, but obviously we know he shows up later, and I love that interaction between the two of them mm-hmm. when he gives them the necklace, and he's like, you're late.
Yeah, that was great. That was cool. Didn't he, at one scene, he said, you look terrible. Was that the same scene? He says, you look terrible.
Yeah. 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 He said, you look terrible. Did you notice, before we move on to the next scene, did you notice all the way through this? And I don't know if it's the 4K because it makes you, I think it was there before, but it just makes you so much more aware because you know how good the image it looks. Almost. The entire movie, both of these movies now, because we're into finishing the second movie here, Legolas is clean the entire time. He doesn't sweat. He doesn't get grimy. At the end of this movie, he's actually grimy. At the Battle of Helm's Deep there, he actually got a little dirty. But most of the time, they'll go through a battle and everybody's covered in dirt and they're just sweaty and slimy and greasy looking. And then you look at, you know, Legolas, and he's mm-hmm. just perfectly, like, he's powdered, ready to go on the Today Show.
He's well groomed.
Yeah, but he's an elf.
Dust can't touch him.
Yeah, exactly. Nothing sticks to him because he doesn't sweat. Mm-hmm. And it's just, he just looks good. And I think the 4K and the HDR and everything, that this, the imagery really pulls that out even more. How good, mm-hmm. you know, how well they did his makeup and everything. Looks really good.
And, you know, Elrond always looks great, and Arwen, of course. I mean, the beautiful flashbacks with Arwen are really nice. You know, she's wearing that dress, and that semi-translucent yes. dress is amazing.
Yeah.
And the color and everything.
You know what else I was looking at? The ears. Like how they did, like her ears,
it's
like,
great.
What's her father's name? I forget her father's name.
Steven Tyler?
No, in the movie.
What are you talking about? Her father, Elrond.
Elrond.
Yeah, yeah.
When you see Steven Tyler.
I was like, why is he forgetting Steven Tyler? Doesn't he mean a Boston
and
guy?
I'm from Boston. So, yeah, like I'm going to forget Steven Tyler. That's a whole other makeup job we could talk about.
That's a whole movie right there.
Right, exactly. no, so when you see Elrond, it's like he always has the hair come down in mm-hmm. front of his ears and then the ear sticks out. So it's, you can see how they're doing that. But when they're showing hers, her hair is pulled back and you see the full ear. Mm-hmm. And to look at that ear, go in there and look and see where, you know, the rim of your ear goes around, but on the mm-hmm. elves, it keeps on going. And mm-hmm. how they did that, it's like, I know how I would have done it, like artistic, like you put the line in, then you actually airbrush a line in to make it look like where the rim keeps going. You mm-hmm. airbrush that away. But I'm wondering if they also went in, especially on this remaster, if they digitally helped that along too. Like they physically made an ear, but then manipulated it digitally to clean it up and make it look, cause they look perfect.
Maybe in some of the less motion shots and some of the still shots they may have. I don't imagine they did, but maybe.
Yeah.
You know, she, I've seen an interview with her where she was adamant that she wanted to have the biggest elf ears out of anybody.
Oh, really?
So apparently Liv Tyler did have the biggest elf ears.
Oh, wow. That's funny. All right. Third scene I have here Exit stage left. Really quick scene, but I gave it a box of popcorn because, as my listeners know, I love a great pan. And at 18:02, Saruman walks off to the left, and he was talking to, what is it, Wormtongue? Is that his name? God. So he's talking to him over the cauldron, but he's speaking, and then he walks off to the left of the screen, and the pan is perfect. Mm-hmm. Like, if you have a 5.1 setup and you set up even just like the pink noise to go around the room, I don't care how well matched your speakers are, you're going to hear a difference as it goes, especially from the front to the side, just because of where your walls are and everything. There's going to be a slightly different tone that you're going to be able to hear the difference. When he pans off, you can't hear a difference. And I think that's in like the blend that they do, like in the design process, the sound design, where they'll blend the center into the left channel. And then as the left channel goes off, you've forgotten how good it sounds or whatever the pitch was different. It just mm-hmm. blends perfectly. And he just walks off and now you're hearing his voice perfectly like it was in the middle of the room, but now it's off camera, off screen. And I thought it was fantastic.
Nice. I'm going to have to go back and check that one out. That was what was the timestamp for that one?
18:02. Okay. And as Martin noticed, it'll be in the show notes.
All right.
Oh. All right. Next scene I have up is at 28:04, the paper map. So if you remember at the beginning of Fellowship, they showed the map. Mm-hmm. And that just struck me as so beautiful looking in the new restoration, right? Because that map, I thought it was paper in the Blu-ray, in the DVD, I thought, mm-hmm. but now looking at it, it looked like a nice piece of leather. It had a nice texture to it. I think you and I even talked about it, like even the ink on it, it felt like it was 3D. Like it had a really nice texture and depth to it. Mm-hmm. This is clearly a different map. Obviously, they make it more than one, right? But this one was paper, and when you looked at it, you could see the folds in it, and it looks like a nice piece of paper. But then add to that, that when they unfold it, you can hear the paper, the stock. You can feel the weight just by the sound that it's making, and that it's like it's a heavy stock of paper, not a thin, light piece of paper like our maps are, like, you know, in the car mm-hmm. back in the day when we used maps. But this one, it really jumped out to me. One, first because of the image, and then going back and looking at that image and listening to that scene, you could really hear how nice that stock sounded.
Yeah, and this is, speaking of the scene where Faramir is with his assistant, I forgot his name, but they're trying to make making the plans. Yeah. In terms of audio, I love that scene. You can hear, you know, everybody in the background sort of milling about and talking. It's actually a really cool little scene that when you get in that cave environment, you can really make use of surround sound. And
oh, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. There's more of that to come, especially, you know.
Oh,
you know,
I know one I have in my notes here.
And the Forbidden Pool, right? That's coming up, right?
I don't know. Oh, yeah. That scene there with Gollum.
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah, so we'll talk about that.
I think the following scene, I don't know, did you have anything to say more about the map or?
No, my next scene is, it's that scene, I believe, the moonlight at 37, you talk about the Forbidden Pool at 37:03.
I just wanted to mention chapter 41 where there's a flashback to Faramir.
Okay.
And, Boromir.
Oh, yes. Yes.
And his big speech at Osgiliath, you know, where they're drinking beer and stuff.
Yeah.
If you notice the color changes. It's
yes.
sort of it's a bit of a colder palette.
Yeah.
And brighter. It's a little more lighter and floaty compared to the rest, if that's a word, than the majority of the film, which is set in real time or whatever.
Right.
As you start to rewatch this, you see how the colorists are.
Yeah. It's a cooler color. Uh-huh. It felt less saturated. Mm-hmm. I felt like they took a little of the saturation out, but I also felt like the palette was more of a cool palette throughout. even though that air there, they were in, what's the city?
At the beginning in Gondor or Skellige?
Gondor. Isn't that where they were in the flashback? Were they in Gondor?
I thought they were in Skellige.
Oh, maybe. You'd know better than I would. You know all. I told you, my mind goes to mush. I can't think on the fly. It's not in my notes. but yeah, it's throughout the rest of the movie, it's a lot more warmer. Mm-hmm. It's vibrant. Like you were saying, the colors are just so great. The fields, everything. Yeah. But in this scene here, it totally was like I don't want to say grayed out, but it was a cooler. And I noticed that as well. I didn't put it in my notes, but that's awesome you did, because I almost did. I almost was like, oh, the flashback scene here. But it was really nice how they did that. They did it again later too. I felt like I can't remember where they did it off the top of my head, but
yeah, as you watch it over and over, you're gonna start to see how they help you understand where you are in time, and you don't even need to hear them talk. Sometimes you just look at the color and you can say, oh, okay, well, they're going back in time. You know, this is when Boromir is given the task of trying to bring the ring to Gondor, right? I mean, he doesn't want Boromir to help the Fellowship. He wants the ring for power.
Right.
So, his father hated him. I mean, I felt bad for Faramir because he lost a couple battles or whatever. Yeah. He had no love. He got no love from his dad.
No. But yeah, that moving to the moonlight scene at 3703, I have it up on YouTube. It's like a painting. It's so gorgeous. And this is just the scene of Faramir and the moonlight in the background. And you have a couple of pine trees, and it's like a Bob Ross painting with Faramir in the foreground of it. Mm-hmm. And the image I'm looking at right now that on the screen, it doesn't do it justice what you see on your screen. With that moon looks so nice. It's so bright. And all the details in this scene, in the different grays in the foreground, you can even see Frodo off to the right. And he's kind of like silhouetted by the moonlight in front of him. But the light shining off the rocks, the light shining off of Faramir, the silhouettes of those, like I said, pine trees, the clouds in the sky. It's a quick scene. It's really quick, but you freeze it and look at it, and you could just stare at it and look at all of the, it's gotta be a painting in the background or whatever, the special effects. The waterfall behind Faramir, the highlights of that, the moonlight catching the water, it just looks so good. It's so well done. It's such a quick shot, but so great.
Mm-hmm. I think Tolkien would have been happy with that.
Yes.
Illustration, I would call it.
Yes. It looks so nice. And then that entire scene where you go down, Gollum down there in the pool at the bottom below the waterfall. And I commented to my son, we do a lot of hiking. And you come up to a waterfall, and what's the first thing you notice when you get to a waterfall is that breeze coming off of the water, splat, coming down. And it's like, it's just that cool breeze from water flowing that the water creates, the power of the water. Mm-hmm. And you can see that, you can hear the wind around your room. You can see it, their hair blowing. And it's like, I said to my son, I go, it feels like it got colder in here. I can feel the cold air, but you can't. But it's just so well represented visually and audio wise. It's such a great full scene. And like the echoes and the conversations going on and, Gollum singing and smashing fish.
Yeah. You could hear that. Yeah. It's kind of gruesome, but,
for the fish, but
yeah. Well, also when they catch him, there's a great moment. I don't know if you caught this or not. It was at, 39 minutes and 40 seconds where Gollum's being beat up. He's being kicked and everything else. And he lunges sort of towards the screen, towards the camera, because he's trying to get away from getting beat up, right? He's trying to find a place where he can kind of cozy, you know, get a fetal position and protect himself. But he lunges towards the camera, and his voice comes right at you at the same time.
Yes.
It's amazing. It's a great, great moment.
It is. It really is. There's a lot of stuff like that through the movie that you're just like, there's some scenes coming up that I talk about that it really, fills the room. Mm-hmm. They use the sound at the front of the room, and then it comes at you and fills the room. There's one in particular that I know of, Frodo, towards the end, that I absolutely, I just love how they did it and how his voice, it's so much fun. It's got to be fun for these sound designers that just like having fun with it and making it part of the movie and making it, mm-hmm. making that movie flow. And like I said last week with Godzilla, King of the Monsters, it's like, it was really part of the movie. And like if you're working on a movie like Twister, you can use anything because nobody, what's the inside of tornado sound like? You can't mm-hmm. be wrong, right? You could be bad at it. And maybe it's like, well, that doesn't sound right. Like, mm-hmm. you know, but you're creating there, but in this environment, this is reality and that, or a sense of reality, people's voices, things that would actually happen that mm-hmm. you're trying to pull them into their reality. Right. Mm-hmm. And it's just, they did such a great job with it. And it's, I mean, like you said, you've seen it more times than I have this year. And it's, but every time you pull out something else.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. It's great. So the next scene, were you going to touch on Aragorn sort of?
Which, I'm touching on Aragorn next at 4606 okay. when he opens the doors. And it's right after that scene that we talked about earlier, where he's just come back, right? And he's come back from surviving the fall, and Legolas gave him his necklace back, but now he's going in to see Theoden, and he opens those doors, mm-hmm. and it's like, it's, you know, Western, like he pushes the big giant doors open and he enters the room, but the shot of him is, it's like you come in and the shot starts out on Theoden. And you hear the doors start to open behind you in your okay. theater, in your room, right? But then the camera spins around and now you're looking at Aragorn come in and he's pushing each door, pushing it open. And the bass really kicks in because these are huge, heavy doors. So your room is just like vibrating as these heavy doors are opening up. But then as they pull in tighter on them and one door, like I think the left, enter, you know, reaches its limit first, so you get the mm-hmm. bang at the end and then the right, and they're perfectly placed on either side of your screen, on either side of your room, and you're like bang bang, and it's just nice. That entire scene. And now we get into what you were talking about earlier, those echoes in that the chamber we're in here, and it's the sound that you got out of their mm-hmm. conversation was really, really nice.
And you want it to be Aragorn at that moment, right? I mean, he's like the coolest guy.
At that moment? That's the entire movie.
I thought you wanted to be Legolas.
I do. I have always, I mean, he's immortal. He's so cool. He's so calm. He's so clean. He's so collected. Yeah, he's always clean.
But hey, can I jump back?
Sure. Just no.
A few moments. Because I thought.
We're very strict here.
You can edit this and put it back.
Yeah, exactly.
Put it in chronological order.
Yeah. No problem.
There was a scene that I think is quite beautiful, and that's when Aragorn, and when he finally, you know, he comes out of the, he finds his horse. His horse finds him, I think.
Yes.
He gets out of the water, and he's on his horseback, and it's some beautiful imagery of New Zealand as he's trying to get to Gondor, right?
Right.
But
trying to survive.
Yeah. But at 1 hour, he sees those at 44 minutes, he sees okay. the marching Uruk-hai.
Yes.
And is, you know, and that's where he finds out, well, he's guessing that they could be 10,000 strong, right? Because when he gets to Gondor, they ask him, you know, how many are coming,
Deep.
Whatever.
He's going to Helm's Deep, right?
Sorry.
Yeah.
He kind of knows, how many there are because he saw them. And there's a great audio moment where in the distance, you can hear the Saruman's army.
Yeah.
You know, marching.
And yeah. You hear that later too. Yes.
Yeah. You hear it again. It comes back when they go to Helm's Deep. But there's some really beautiful sweeping views of New Zealand.
Oh,
that are really nice. Yeah.
Yeah. That entire ride that he goes on, it's like his journey to Helm's Deep of on the back of the horse is it's very picturesque. Mm-hmm. But that, yeah, you're right. That they did again, that the bass that they used, it's not overpowering. It's like the correct amount of bass to have it be off in the distance, but you can still feel it. It's not loud, but it's visceral still, even though it's not that loud. It's really, really, really well done as well. Okay. At 49:53 is my next scene called The Gathering. And this is where Treebeard tells us of the gathering of all the Ents, and they all come alive around us. And I thought that was really cool, because as all the Ents are coming to gather, you can feel each footstep with the bass, but you also get all of like your speakers around you, the high speed, your main speakers, not the bass, rustling leaves and branches and stuff. Everything's your whole room is just very active. It's not super loud, but it's super active all around you. Like you're in the middle of a forest that's like encroaching on you.
The timestamp was about 55 minutes for that?
49:53. I had it at 49:53. And it's with, Pippin and,
it's Mary's. Like chapter 39, I believe.
Oh, maybe. Yeah.
The thing that I love about that opening to that chapter is the camera view that takes a bird's eye view and it flies over the Ents and it kind of lands with them in a circle.
Yeah. Like you're describing the shot I have up on YouTube right now.
Okay. I'm just going by memory. I wish I had.
It's like, it's the shot of like, Treebeard's in the middle.
Yeah.
And they're all coming. They're gathered around them and it's like, they're all coming in, but then they come in on that and get tighter. And then now you're in the forest and that's when you hear all that action.
And then you see Merry and Pippin and you can hear the trees are like groaning.
Yeah. Right? Yeah. That's through the first half and this half.
And I think those really activate your subwoofer too. I think.
Yes.
Really nicely. And the voices, I talk about, I think about their voices to me. I don't know if you ever played guitar, but there's like a flange. There's like a flange pedal. And I feel like there's a little bit of, I could be wrong. I'm not an audio engineer, but there's a little bit of flange to these real deep voices of the Ents.
Okay.
And it comes through. I'm a subwoofer along with the groans and the sort of the creaks of the old wood. So yeah, it's a nice little scene.
Yeah, it is. That's exactly what I thought of it too. It's like a nice little scene where it's like, it's just great environment that again, not something that's really going to happen. We've been in the woods in the wind, but to have trees approaching you and having that base, really cool. My next scene is at 53:57 and I just labeled this great HDR. So this scene here is when, Theoden is like in the foreground. Okay. And you have that you're going to remember this. It's bright white light coming from behind him through the open doors. And one of his, I don't know who it is one of his people that serve, people that work for him and his whatever, they're trying to explain to him what's going on. But the detail in this scene, and it's the contrast that goes on here, because it's so bright, he is so backlit here, but then half of his face is lit from the reflection that he's getting off the wall or whatever, but the dark side of his face looks fantastic. You could see when they pull in tighter on his face, you can see on the lit side, you can really see the wrinkles and the pores and everything, the wrinkles around his eyes on both sides. It's just a crazy, crazy scene. At 53:57, you're not going to be able to forget it, because when it goes right to it, your eyes go, ow, because the whole screen goes white and then they focus in on him because that light's in the background. It's insane. The textures in his costume. I called it his costume, but like his neck, he has that collar on and it's like really embossed. Like you can really see like the craftsmanship that went into that. You can see the threads on his shoulders mm-hmm. and stuff just from, you know, when you, a bright light's coming from behind and you can see like whiskers on people's faces or like hairs mm-hmm. coming off their clothing. That's what this scene is like here. Even his hair, his straggly hair coming down. It's a really incredible scene that is really enhanced, I think, by the HDR. At 1 hour and 46 seconds, the shorty. I put this one in because of my wife. So this scene here.
She's that vertically challenged?
Yes, she is. She is 4'10". And this is that scene where yes. Gimli's on the wall and they pan down the wall and you get to Legolas and you look and it's just the top of Gimli's head.
Yeah.
And
should I get you a box?
Should I tell you what's going on or should I just get you a box? Yeah. But yeah, that scene right there is like, I said to my son when that went by, I go, that's mom at a concert.
Mm-hmm.
Cause that's, she's only 4'10". And it's like when we've quote scored, you know, floor seats to a concert, she's like, cause she can't see anything. She's looking at everybody's lower backs. So I love that scene. I think that's a riot and a little bit of humor there.
Well, that moment is, I don't know if it's it must be the beginning of a chapter, but, that's as Saruman's army is approaching, right?
Right. Yes.
So if you listen to the audio, what I really love about that scene where they do these cuts is that, you hear the army marching and it gets louder and louder and louder, but when they cut to the different perspectives of the army on the walls, we'll call them, you know, the elves and Theoden's army, it's a different sound, right?
Right.
And then you go, and then when they cut to the actual Uruk-hai and orcs, that's a different sound level. It sounds completely different. And then
they're heavier.
Right. And then
I felt like they were heavier. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And then they cut to the civilians in the cave, right? Taking shelter and you can hear it. But it's a different, it's obviously more subdued because it's, you know, they're kind of
right
far away. Then they add rain to the mix, right? Isn't that a great moment?
Yeah, the thunderclap.
I've seen it before in films, and I'm trying to remember where I've seen it before, but kind of silent, and then all of a sudden it's like, wait, this sucks. Like, we got 10,000, Uruk-hai and whatever coming at us, and now it's going
to
rain.
Yeah, I said that to my son. It's like, right at that moment, you're like, oh, it could be worse. It could be, could be raining.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And, it's like, and add to that all those sounds, okay? So you got the marching. You got the rain, you got the sounds of people, whatever, talking, and then Howard Shore's soundtrack in the background.
Yeah.
It's just an amazing mix of stuff happening.
So we'll get to that in a second. You're leading right into a scene that's coming up really quickly.
Okay. And the other thing that's part of the scene is that I remember it's very vivid, the sounds of the swords being unsheathed.
Yes.
And the army, the Uruk-hai army, is it Saruman's army? I know it's Uruk-hai in the army, but it's made up of all different.
Like, yeah, it's Saruman attacking and the 10,000 to overwhelm them.
Right. They're smashing, they're stomping their spears. And you hear that too. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's so cool. It's just multidimensional. You know, each shot in that scene.
Yeah.
It's great.
Yeah. It's really crazy. We'll talk more about that in a second, but the next scene, I always like to mention these scenes. So this is at 105:28, we get the Wilhelm scream. You know what that is?
Oh, wait a second.
The Wilhelm scream?
Remind me, okay.
So the Wilhelm scream is that famous stock scream that's been used since like the 50s or something. The guy's name, let's see, I actually put the guy's name in my notes here. What's it? Private Wilhelm. He was, what the heck is his real name? Anyways, it was used after he did it in early 50s, and it's been over and over for somebody that falls in. It's in all the Star Wars movies, and whenever it pops up, you'll hear it. It's very distinct, and it happens at exactly the 105:28 mark, and a guy gets thrown over, somebody gets thrown over the wall, and you hear the, and it's like that Wilhelm scream. It's known for that scream, and it's in all the Star Wars movies. And like I brought it. It's in Batman Returns, which is the Michael Keaton Batman. He throws the guy where he's not supposed to kill anybody, but he throws the guy over the wall. Mm-hmm. That is a Wilhelm scream. It's been in some of the TV shows. It's been in Mandalorian. It's in everything. So I always make note of it when I hear it in any of these movies.
Is that just following when the guy, one of Theoden's army, loses one of his arrows and he hits one of the Iroquois and then there's a retaliation? Or no,
it's a little bit after that. Yeah. Okay. I don't remember exactly. I just know they're all battling on the top. And somebody gets thrown over the wall, and you hear the Wilhelm scream from there.
So that's when they must have put the ladders up already then.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, the ladders were up. But now we're getting to the one where you were talking. Hang on a sec. The breach at 109:17, and I gave this two boxes of popcorn, but this is where they blow the wall open.
Yeah, I know. But the sewers line.
Yes, exactly.
I know what you're talking about.
This gets to the part that everything you were describing, all of the great sounds, the battle that's going on, the people yelling, the score is loud here. Aragorn is screaming to Legolas, like, kill him. Remember, he's like, take him, and Legolas is firing arrows into him. But everything you were describing before, all the base, the army marching in, everything that's going on. But when this bomb goes off, all of that goes away.
Mm-hmm.
And all we get is like just a really nice, long, drawn out explosion in slow motion for all intents and purposes, because I mean, in reality, how long does this explosion take? About 3 seconds from the moment it goes off to the last, maybe 5 seconds before those last pieces hit the ground. But it takes almost 26 seconds for this explosion to pan out. And it starts at the 109:17 mark, but it ends at the 109:43 mark. And all the while, all of those great sounds of the battle went away, and we just get the bass. And then you get the sound of all of those pieces landing.
Flying at you.
Yeah. They're either flying at you or you get the thunderous thud as they land on part of the army or whatever they're doing. But it's all different shots, and the sound is all appropriate for whatever you're about to see, whatever shot they're giving you, the pieces are landing appropriately around you. And like I said, it's 26 seconds of an explosion that just so well done, but it's all set up by everything, like you said, with all of the great sounds of the battle going on, you know, because if you don't take something away, it doesn't really emphasize it as much.
Right. Good point.
Really cool. Really cool. At the 1 hour, 11 minute mark and 8 seconds, we get another great Legolas moment. Him on the sled where he takes the shield and he slides down the stairs.
All right. So there are just a few moments in the Lord of the Rings that I have to say. I mean, I don't know if I want to call it jumping the shark or not, but, it almost reminds me of, you know, George Lucas with, you know, having Ewoks throw rocks at stormtroopers and taking them down. And then, you know, actually, you know, Merry and Pippin also do that from the hanging on a tree beard.
Yeah.
They threw a few rocks and they knocked the orcs over. But Legolas making a sled or whatever it is. And
yeah, like a skateboard or sled or surfboard.
And he's shooting arrows at the same time.
He's like, great. Legolas.
But that one doesn't bother me as much as the scene where he, in the Return of the King, where he slides down the elephant.
Right. That was a little, I still loved it. I still loved it.
It's funny, but it's a little bit hokey, I think.
It is hokey, but I think it's meant to be because I think because that's part of the humor of the whole competition with him and Gimli. So that's being set up, which I know the first time I saw these movies, my buddy was telling me, he's like, pay attention to this because they have a competition and it's even more prevalent in the books from what I understand. But I feel like in this, in the new restoration, it's a little bit more evident only because I feel like the dialogue is that much more clear and you can really hear them in the battle. They're like, that's 17 and that's not, you know, it's a little bit more like, clear. So I think I agree with you where it's, you know, it's kind of like a little bit of jumping the shark or, I mean, he's on an elephant, but it's, I get it, but it's, I think it plays into it. It's part of that humor and it is an alternate world. So, I mean, I loved that scene. I thought it was spectacular. And then you have Gimli after he slides down the elephant, Gimli is like, well, it only counts as one.
Yeah. Like, well, I like further along where he says, I think Legolas asked him how many he killed and he says, or he says 41 and Gimli says 42.
Yeah.
And then, Legolas shoots
the one under. It was twitching.
Yeah. But he was already dead.
Yeah. He's already dead because he's got my axe buried in his skull.
Yeah. Oh, Gimli's so funny. Oh, bring your pretty face to my axe.
yeah, that was early. That was the first battle.
That was one of the wolves of Angband.
Yeah, and he ends up under the wolf, and then he's like the entire battle. He's like, whoa, whoa, keep piling on.
I love that character. He's so,
Gimli.
So great.
Yeah, yeah. Throw me. Don't tell the elf. So great. All right, at 1 hour 21 minutes and 57 seconds. Ooh.
You jumped pretty far, didn't you?
Yeah, from 111 to 08, 111, 08 to there, to Treebeard. What do you got in the middle?
Do I have anything? Wait, where did you go to one?
I, at 121.57. It's a 10-minute jump.
Oh, no. Okay. And that's back to Treebeard.
That's back to Treebeard. Yeah. Okay. And this is where he realizes Saruman has like killed that forest. And this is where he's like, all right, that's it. We're in. Mm-hmm. You know, cause up until then, it wasn't his battle. He didn't want anything to do with it. And then he lets out that yell.
Yeah. Oh, that's incredible.
Isn't it? And you know what's funny? After watching the Snyder Cut, and the Snyder Cut starts with the yell from Superman that supposedly wakes the mother boxes up and everything. And it was different. That was a ringing yell that traveled through the galaxies or whatever and through the, through the planet. This yell, I thought, it was really interesting because you can hear it grow from the front of the room, right? Mm-hmm. So like he's at the front, it comes at you, but then it like filled your room around, like it didn't go past you. It like, it came at you, filled the room, and then the shot changed so you could see it go away. Mm-hmm. So it like stopped and I felt like if it was like a bubble, it was in the middle of your room. You know what I mean? Like you're kind of in the bubble. Yeah. It didn't go around you. Mm-hmm. It went like it's just hovering there. Then it dissipates away. Mm-hmm. It was really weird. I think if you hear it again and you hear my explanation, you'd understand what I'm saying. But it wasn't like a lot of times when they yell something, it'll yell, it'll come at you and go by you. Mm-hmm. But this one just like hovered there, then just dissipated, like the bubble popped or something. It was. Mm-hmm. You know, like he's yelling out to everybody and
it was a calling of the Ents. Cool. Yeah. I actually remember hearing that in the theaters. I remember such what a powerful scene it was. And I love his voice. I mean, like I was saying before, it has sort of a flange to it. It's very deep and it's kind of shifting. His voice kind of shifts a little bit too. I don't know if you,
because he talks so slow, you get,
maybe,
they added a wave or a pattern to his voice. So it didn't seem as monotonous. Mm-hmm. You know, so I thought that was really cool. And it's like, it's not something you probably notice on a first viewing or even a second, but as you pay attention to him, you'll notice, like you said, there's a pattern to even a single word that he says, you know, and it's like, and that creates a little bit more interaction and it takes away the monotony, but still you get the long drawn out speech, you know, but it's entertaining. At 1 hour, 25 minutes, and 28 seconds, the Nazgul. This is one of those scenes that I think you were talking about earlier with some reverb and stuff, and we were saying, and I said I really wanted to talk. This is a really cool one. So I gave this one 2 boxes of popcorn, and Faramir is taking Frodo and Sam back to Gondor. This is where, or they're making their way back there. And we hear that ominous whoosh in the background, like, here comes the Nazgul again. And first time in this version, or in part two anyways, but that's a real nice deep bass. But Frodo says, they're here, they've come. And when he says they're here, there's some nice reverb. It's like a deep voice, like, you know, his eyes are kind of rolled up in his head. He's kind of being possessed at the time. So you get a nice real reverb out of it. But then when he says they're here, the voice comes right out of the screen and completely surrounds you, fills the entire room. It's like they're here, and you're like, wow. It's really, really nice. Then we get the Nazgul coming in from, where is it, the left side rear of your room, flies over you, and now you have that whole scene where he's just, they're flying over you, your overheads are being engaged, your sides are being engaged as this thing circles around. Really nice bass, just a really, really fun scene that all starts out with Frodo's voice just literally coming right off the screen at you.
So the whole scene with the Nazgul or the Ringwraiths, then it cuts to back to Theoden and Aragorn. But did you want to cover the rest of the scene at Gondor?
Sure.
Because this is one of my favorite moments is when the Nazgul. This is jumping a little bit, but when the Nazgul rises up, and Frodo sees this thing, like you are the wings.
Yep.
Of the flying creature. I don't think Tolkien had an actual name for that.
Yeah, he did. Like I had it in my last podcast when they showed him when they were, remember when they were in the swampy area?
Yeah.
I had it in my last podcast for that. I can't remember what the name of it was though. I'd have to go back to my notes of that podcast, but it does, they do have a name, that flying dragon creature.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. But when that rate rises up and, you can hear the wings flapping in both left and right channels. It's so nice.
Yeah.
And also, it seems like it's a little bit overhead too. Did you notice that it was a little overhead as well?
Oh yeah. Yeah. The overhead's engaged.
But it's almost like, for me, it might be the most sort of interactive scene in the whole trilogy because you're kind of engulfed into the sound of this massive, like this scary creature with the Ringwraith sitting on top.
Right.
But yeah, I thought that was really incredible.
Yeah, that scene and going back to when Frodo, Sam, and Gollum are hiding underneath the bush in that swampy area first time you see them, that's very similar. It's like you get that the bass kicking in with each flap of the wings, but then you also have the higher pitch noises obviously coming from your overheads giving you that directionality around your room as the thing flies over you. Same here. And it's you can almost feel like the wind coming down on you as they flap those powerful wings.
And right. That was a good sound effect there.
Hey, well, maybe I have a career in whooshing.
But that, I think that was about 1 hour, 33 minutes around that scene. But what did you think about when Sam tackles Frodo so he doesn't get taken by the Ringwraith? And they seemingly fall, you know, a quarter of a mile away or something.
Yeah.
You can't hear anything else. It's completely silent. Do you think that they meant to do that in terms of putting the viewer in the space of just Sam and Frodo?
Yes.
And extracting them from the battle that's going on? So it was intentional to kind of make it very, very secluded from the rest of what's going on.
Well, I think that's exactly what it is. It's not only, I mean, it's literally Sam pulling Frodo away because Frodo is possessed and he's trying to give himself up. He's trying to give himself to the Ringwraith. Like that's, you know, he's being pulled by them. The ring is pulling him, you know, and when Sam tackles him, it's literally like if if you and I were at a party and mm-hmm. you're in a room with a bunch of people and I just pull you out into a quiet room mm-hmm. just to right. talk to you, right?
Right.
I think that's literally what they're going for here. Mm-hmm. And what ends up happening is it lets you focus and it puts you in Frodo's shoes mm-hmm. in his mindset because he was just so possessed on what was going on. And now he's just focused on Sam and Sam's like, I'm with you. It's like, I will take care of this. I will take care of you. I am, you know, I will always be here. And that's, mm-hmm. that's the message. And that's all we can hear. Mm-hmm. And I have a buddy that, Dr. Joe that I do with in my other comic podcast. I'm friends with him through there. And when he comments on Lord of the Rings, he says Sam is the most integral character and he'll fight mm-hmm. anybody on. He'll argue with anybody. And it's a scene like this that you say this entire movie, he says like, it's all based on Sam. And it's like everybody looks at Frodo and goes, well, Frodo, it's like he's the one carrying the ring, but Sam's carrying Frodo.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So it's like an argument can be made for that. Mm-hmm. And this is a great scene that you've just pointed out that it's like, yeah, look at the entire focus of the movie. Everything went away except for Sam's voice.
Mm-hmm.
And for that exact reason, I think.
Yeah, I think you're right. I mean, it was surely intentional, and I think it works. It works, yeah.
I mean, I've made a lot of mistakes in art and gone, I meant that, but I don't think this is one of those. I don't think Peter Jackson's like,
I mean,
we forgot to put sound in.
Yeah, I mean, that's something that happens in all, you know, a lot of movies. It is interesting that they don't leave, I mean, there's not much ambience at all. Like, it's,
right.
I think you hear some music composition behind it, but you don't even hear any bombing or people screaming at all.
Right.
And I guess,
but just your recollection of it is yeah. like, that's the point of the scene. It's like, you're yeah. focused on Sam. It's like, right, you're not going to remember a lot of the other stuff.
Right.
At, jumping from here, I'm jumping to 1:30, 1 hour, 30 minutes, 18 seconds. And I hadn't even come up with a name for this yet, but this is the scene where Gandalf is coming down with the sun behind him.
Mm-hmm.
And it's, what did they call it? You said, look to the east at the rising.
The break of dawn or whatever.
At the break yeah. of dawn or whatever. Yeah. He said, look to the east, mm-hmm. which is, that's where the sun's coming up.
Mm-hmm.
This picture, the HDR here is another great scene. And the picture that I have up on the screen is, it's so, so nice. It's right before they really shine. So you get the bright sunlight kind of at the top of your screen. Not kind of, it is at the top of your screen, but you get Gandalf leading everybody, but check out the white of Gandalf. Like, you could see Gandalf very clearly on the white horse, his white robe, everything, but it's just one small white thing in the middle. But then in the foreground, you have, you know, all of the orcs and that entire army with their, well, spears pitched forward, everything. It's just mm-hmm. the contrast from the light in the background all the way to the darkness of the, you know, the silhouetted army. It's just really, really cool scene. And then of course the sunlight shines through and your screen goes bright and it's just, and then we get that whole battle, which is more just completely enveloping sound.
Yeah. I mean, I have to admit the first time I saw that scene, I wasn't even thinking that, oh, he's using the sun to blind.
Yeah.
like you, if you ride bikes, you know, you gotta be yeah. careful about riding into the sun, right? Yeah, I mean, I think that scene is really great. I'm surprised you didn't mention the sound of the roar of the horn of Hammerhand.
Yeah, well, I mean, I knew we'd have a lot to talk about. There's always stuff.
Too much to talk about. Yeah, yeah.
There's always, and I'm always afraid. That's why, again, Martin, my notes, I know. I'm always afraid I'm going to leave something out. And then people are going to be like, you forgot about this. Well, it doesn't mean I didn't see it. But yes, I even like that because it's, when you're going through these things, you know, it's like there's stuff like, it's just what catches your eye on this particular
right,
viewing,
right? Yeah.
But you're right, that roar, and you're yeah. like, and that was Gimli.
How does Gimli find his way to the horn of Hammerhand?
I know.
Of course it's got to be him. Nobody yeah. could blow a horn like him.
Yeah. They're lucky right. it was down low like that.
Yeah. That's true.
It's like, if it was set up for a normal person, he'd be on a box.
All right. So let's, So you want to move on to the, what do you have? What have you got after?
My next scene after that is Damn. It's called Damn. When the dam breaks at 1 hour, 32 minutes and 2 seconds. Damn. Two boxes of popcorn, because this is another one of those slow motion. I mean, it's kind of slow motion when the dam explodes, but then it's kind of not, because then now the water's just spreading out everywhere. So you get all of that great bass and you get the things being crushed. I mean, your room's engulfed in sound. Mm. It's just a really cool scene that lasts quite a while. And it's like the varying degrees of bass intensity too is really cool throughout here, because you get a nice deep bass when it first explodes, but then as the water's overtaking different parts and the scenes keep changing, the vibrations in your room are rising and going down. It's almost visceral throughout, like you feel something the entire time, but to different degrees of intensity. It's really cool, really cool for bass nuts, I think.
Did you pick up this on the flip side of bass, did you pick up when the ant is on fire and he sticks his head into the water and you hear that hiss? That hiss sound?
My son picked up on that. My son was like, did you see that? I was like, yep, you can hear that. It's like trying to put himself out.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's cool little details like that are just so much fun that you can and it's accurate too. Like, you know where it is. Like, even if you close your eyes and watch that scene, it's like, you'll know where you could point to it. It's pretty cool. I love when they do stuff like that. And I've said that many times on this podcast. I've been doing that for years. Watch scenes of movies and then like close your eyes and see how accurate it looks in your head from where the sounds are in your room. Last scene I have, doesn't mean it's the last scene. The last scene I have is at 1 hour, 34 minutes and 49 seconds. And it's basically a scene of the picture. For the picture of Frodo's sword, when he's got Sam down on the ground and he's pointing the sword at him. He's like holding him and Sam's like, it's me, Frodo, it's me, Sam. And Frodo's like basically taken over. He's possessed again, but he's got his sword right at Sam's throat. But the image like I have up on YouTube is like, it's a close up on Frodo's face, but it's the long shot of that fairly short sword, but the detail that you could feel that, like, you could see the texture of the smooth metal, but then the scrolling design that on that elvish sword. And then even the guard before the handle, you could see some detail in that. And of course, looking at Frodo's, like, his cloak, his skin, the dirt on his face. I mean, it's just a really well shot scene. And the contrast between his warm face and the cool sword, there's so much going on there, and they keep flipping back and forth from that close up, then to Sam's face and back and forth. But I thought that was a really, really well shot scene.
Yeah. So that's almost it, right?
Mm-hmm.
Well, the scene of Mordor with the three Nazgul, they were three flying back.
Yep.
And there's lightning and volcanic eruptions. That was pretty nice too.
Yeah. Yep. Yeah. That's all I have though. That's all I have for scenes. What was I going to say? Is there anything you would have liked to have seen differently out of these? Or is this like literally a masterpiece?
Out of the Two Towers?
Yeah. Now that we're finishing up the movie itself.
Ah, that's a tough one. I mean, maybe Legolas sliding down.
Take that out, you mean?
Same time. No, I mean, I think, you know, one of the things that I wanted to mention is that, I think what's really critical to the whole trilogy is Kate Blanchett, as she provides the narration for.
She opens the movie. The entire series.
Yeah, and she's a real, you know, that her, not only is she Galadriel, but she's a real character in terms of narration, and she pulls all these films together, the whole story together, but it's not something you don't, you know, it's different. You don't see her as Galadriel when you hear the voice. I don't, at least.
Right.
I'm hearing her as a narrator, but no, I mean, what would I change? I mean, I don't know.
Yeah.
I mean, the theatrical version is great. I mean, some of the extended stuff is, you know, did you really need it?
Yes.
You know, I mean, yes, we need it. But I think, you know, I think Peter Jackson has said that he's, you know, he's actually a fan of the theatrical versions because they were what he wanted. You know, they didn't, I mean, I think they cut it a little bit, but, you know.
Well, see, I liked the extended cuts because I didn't read the books. You didn't read the books, I feel like you need the extended cut so that there's a little bit more background and explanation on, mm-hmm. on a lot of things. And I think if you've read the books, maybe, I don't know, because for instance, Terminator 2, I read that book before the movie came out, mm-hmm. and I was semi-disappointed in the movie because there was mm-hmm. a lot of stuff left out that is in the extended editions of that, and I love I really like the extended editions of that. Mm-hmm. So I don't know if you've read the books, if you've really prefer one over it seems to me like everybody that's a fan, nobody really watches the regular theatrical versions.
No.
Do you hear that? Do you hear a lot of people go, nah, I won't watch extended?
I've heard some people, even some of the actors in the film, say they'll watch the theatrical because they just don't have time to watch the extended versions. But, I don't know. If you're going to watch it, I'd say watch the extended, you know.
I mean, Return of the King is almost 4 hours.
Wow.
That's almost 4 hours long. The extended version of that it's almost Snyder cut length. That's pretty good. I mean, right. And he made three movies to tell this story. And it's like, everybody's getting on, you know, Snyder for putting out a mm-hmm. 4 hour movie when it's like, well, Peter Jackson already did it pretty much,
right,
but he
right.
almost did it three times.
Right, right, right.
So I think we just, if it's good content, doesn't matter if it's a half hour or mm-hmm. 5 hours.
Well, I mean, look
we
at
want
the, game,
the content.
Look at Game of Thrones. I have the 4K box, and I still have it. I've seen season 1 and 8 in 4K,
yeah.
But because of Lord of the Rings and other movies, I just haven't had the time to dig into
That looks whole, really. My wife and I are going through that. I'm really enjoying that again.
It's insane. Yeah.
Yeah.
But you know, there's one scene that's really great, and I believe we kind of skipped over it, and it's when Gollum sort of meets Sméagol, you know? And,
okay.
Frodo and Sam are sleeping. Isn't that
Gollum,
part of this?
Oh, is that in this one? I think that's that's at the end of the first one, I think. Oh, the first part of Two Towers. The one where you really get them going back and Gollum and Sméagol going back and forth.
Yeah.
Against each other.
They're sleeping. Frodo and Sam are sleeping in sleeping bags.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And yeah, I'm pretty sure that's at the end of Two Towers part two, part one. That's at the end of part one.
Oh, that's right. That's right. I'm thinking, I knew it was Two Towers. Yeah. That's actually a really, you know, Fran Walsh actually wrote that scene and directed it.
Oh, really?
And if you ask Peter Jackson about one of his favorite scenes in the film, he would tell you that one. Maybe not. I don't think it's just because it's his partner, but they needed a scene and where they really told the story of Sméagol, of his dual personality.
Yeah.
There's two people living in this creature. And she wrote the scene and directed it and just took a few cameramen and Frodo and Sam and just did it. And it's a very good scene. It's very critical, I think, to understanding who Sméagol is.
Yeah, the way they shot, like, it's almost like they shot all of Sméagol's scenes in one direction and then all of, like, Gollum's scene. And it's like the voice changes that mm-hmm. they had out of that same character. Mm-hmm. The angles, the lighting, the facial expressions, it was just paced so perfectly the way mm-hmm. the scenes snap back and forth. And when I reviewed it in the last, when I did Lord of the Rings part, Two Towers part one, what I liked about it was I thought that the special effects there were really good. Where there's some weaker parts early on where the lighting on him didn't match the stuff that was going on around. Like, it was almost like a cooler lighting in a warmer setting. And it was like, all right, that's a little bit off. But this scene here was so consistent and it was so well done. It was, and again, like you said, to the story, it's so integral. It was just such a, it is a great, great scene. And it's not a bad thing to mention again.
Sorry about that. Bye.
Oh, no problem. No problem. There's no rules here.
Yeah.
It's like, what are you talking about? Oh, all right. Anything else?
That's it. It's got to be pretty late for you.
Oh, yeah. It's only 1 o'clock in the morning over here. But yeah, that's all we have for Lord of the Rings, Two Towers. Part two. And, but let's see, let's close it up here for a second. So thank you to everybody for, tuning in this long. Hopefully the edits come out pretty good. We had a little few snafus here and there, but, thanks to everybody. You can find us, you can find Jeff at HD Report on Twitter, or hd-report.com is a website with all the great goodies there, going all the way from reviews of movies down to the little bits that we talked about here and the little digital bits, all the way to some hardware, all the equipment and that reviews of equipment and everything. And also you can find me on Twitter at BrightsideHT, or you can email me at brightsidehometheater@gmail.com and check out my website, brightsidehometheater.com. And you can also go on YouTube and check us out there. Some great imagery from this podcast. Hopefully the imagery comes out okay. And please, if you could, subscribe. And Patreon, thank you to this week, Tom H., new Patreon supporter of one of my 13 supporters. Thank you to all of my supporters. Thank you very much. And on Twitter, thank you to Fred Baldwin and Austin Helmink. And that will do it for this week. Oh, I got some kind of noises coming in here. That will do it for this week. We got all sorts of bugs going on here. Jeff, you've been great.
Thank you. This is the longer, this was the extended edition.
This is the extended Two Towers part two. Well, it's funny. Have you listened to the AV Rant guys I told you about before? AV Rant?
I need to.
Tom and I went over 3 hours.
We recorded
a 3-hour podcast. I have listeners tell me they are now part of the 3-hour club because they listen to the whole thing. And, I think it's even more than 3 hours on Patreon because we did a little before and after. He was my first, recording on YouTube. Mm-hmm. It's a 3-hour video and his computer died. That's how we hung up.
Oh my God.
It was him and I. He's like, oh no, he looks down and he's looking on the screen. He's like, I think my battery's about to, and he went away. And it was like, it was three. We had a blast.
That's a good battery though. Man, my MacBook Pro does not last that long.
No, I'm running at a 2-hour and 27 recording right now, but we have a lot that's going to, so people listening to this, when you hear, they'll know how much was taken out because the podcast, we talked for a little bit at the beginning. That'll be on Patreon. And then we lost power and lost internet. We lost all sorts of things. So,
but we made it. We made it through.
We made it. We're here. That's it. And you're going to come back in 2 months and we'll do the second. We'll wrap the whole thing up.
If you have me, I would.
Of course I'll have
you. I would love to.
Because then we're going to do The Hobbit. We're going to do all are single discs. So you'll probably just have to sit in for that. We'll just do The Hobbits together. We'll see how that goes.
All right. Could do Game of Thrones, but that would be.
What do you do? An episode? What do you do? Like the whole? We got years. We're not going anywhere. You've been doing this forever. I'm going into my second year. We got time. We'll find content to talk about.
You could do Game of Thrones. Oh man, that's a lot.
Yeah,
there's so many episodes.
Yeah. You'd have to do season by season. You'd just do a season, but then you'd have to watch a whole season, make notes. A
little too much.
Martin thought my notes were long before. Wait till I do a whole season of a show. All right. let's get out of here. Thank you, everybody, for listening. I will see you next week. And go push play.
Hey, Fred.
This has been a Hey, Fred production with theme music by Jeff Bernhardt and Throne Vault Productions.